Off the ball.
You know, Jerry was an oddball. You know, you didn't know what way to take Jerry at times. Jerry was strongly opinionated. He was controversial. He was so, so smart, such a philosopher, and just a great orator and a wonderful use of the English language. And I'm really saddened, really saddened.
Off the ball.
Weeknights from 7 and weekends from 1.
This is OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
It's spinning! It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton has made it!
Do you feel moderately happy?
No, I feel like I've been kissing my sister, I suppose.
In the pocket for his drop goal attempt. Here he goes, O'Gara. He's done it! That surely is the grand slam.
We target players all the time. That's part of rugby, isn't it? Let me know.
Sexton, wonderful pass and stopped.
There'll be more than grenades. There'll be full tanks and full shells landing on the Aviva.
Grand Slam winners on St. Patrick's Day at Twickenham.
Yes, you're very welcome along. Wednesday Night Rugby, round three of the Six Nations has come and gone, or certainly a curtailed version of round three. Ireland winners in Rome, extraordinary situation at the Principality. And the net result, of course, is that Wales play Italy in round four and then presumably have a crack at a Grand Slam on March 20th. Keith Wood is with us. Hello.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well. And we have roped in Stuart Barnes. Always great to have you on, Stuart.
Thank you, Joe.
The FFR have released a report into the French outbreak this afternoon. They have cleared the French management, Professor Roger Salaman. He was president of the commission looking into all this. He was on French radio today. He said of Galtier, he's not patient zero. It's virologically obvious from the distance he went to see his son play rugby and the distance from which there were the first cases. I'm not saying this to defend him. He doesn't need to be defended. I said this because this is the truth, end quote. So the FFR have cleared their management. Keith, I mean, it would have been very difficult not to clear their management. They're rather good at the moment.
Yeah, they are rather good. And they're on a little bit of a run too. You know, it's... Look, I think it just shows up and throws up the level of complications that we're trying to live in at the present moment in time and what qualifies or doesn't qualify. I would have thought going away to watch someone play another game outside your bubble wouldn't qualify. But look, I'm and have been consistently uncomfortable with an awful lot of the game that gets shown, the difficulty that it is to the guarantee of what each team is willing and able to go and do. I think we've been very fortunate in Ireland for a period of time, but, and I'm not saying that with a look at us, we're doing great, others aren't doing so great, but it's a huge challenge to try and have any level of sport at any stage. So, look, I've sympathy for everybody that goes in with it, but they have been... look, I'm just delighted that they've decided to play the game at the end of March. If that game was going to be played in June or July, it would have made a farce of the whole thing.
Mm. Yeah, that's the main thing, Stuart, isn't it? Really, from the integrity of the competition point of view, that at least this thing has been cancelled and doesn't have an asterisk beside the tournament then.
Well, all sport has suffered, Joe, during the pandemic. But you think about rugby, the Heineken Cup, it started out with a new format. That went. We've got another new format. I'm really sorry. Whoever wins that tournament this year or last year, it's not the real Heineken Cup. In England, where I live, the Premiership has been turned into something of a farce with laws being changed mid-season because of cancelled games. And, you know, Keith knows, I know you know, the Six Nations is what the general public buy into more than anything. And had Scotland ended up with a 28-0 win and France had their opportunity to be going for the title to the Grand Slam cancelled, then I think people would look and say, you know, rugby really is just, it's wearing a disguise and trying to fool it. It's in a mess. And you know, I'm not going to judge Galtier. If he has gone to see his kid, he's stupid, but he's a human being. As long as France are okay, they play the game against Scotland, we end up with a Six Nations that is played start to finish, then I think that is crucial for rugby. I think European rugby cannot take a Six Nations that ends up in the sort of farce that too many of the other tournaments have.
So, Stuart, tell us, what are we to make of this Welsh situation?
Well, what situation? I mean, they've taken advantage of sending-offs. They've scored tries. They have been street smart. They're competitive in the back row. And I think they deserve to beat England. You know, they don't look a great team, but it's not a great year. I can't see them winning a Grand Slam because I can't conceive of them winning in France. But I think they're going there with a shot because they're going to beat Italy in Rome. There's no doubt about that. And I think the tournament's very interesting because thereafter, England are on a nosedive and they're struggling to find their way. Ireland, I think, though Italy are not a great team, showed enough for me in terms of performance to think they're going the other way. And Scotland are still in this flux of up and down at the moment. And you're not quite certain what you get, but it won't be bad.
Keith, where are you in Wales then?
Well, I look, Ed Smith, the former English cricketer, wrote a book on luck at some stage. And we never factor it in when we discuss games as this being a proper real mitigating factor. It gets dispelled incredibly easily, incredibly quickly. Wales have been lucky, but they've rode their luck incredibly well. You know, I think there's a certain element of bravery in how they've played. I'm entertained by the sort of the litany of things that have happened to go in their order, but they haven't been embarrassed by it. They've embraced it and taken it. And like the sending offs were both daft, so they did what they were supposed to do and they hung on. And like whatever it is in their DNA, whatever it is about Welsh going all the way back to the 70s or whatever, they have. They're hungry and they have an ability to close out a game, even if nothing has said in the previous 80 minutes that they should. And they've done that consistently. So they've taken everything. I mean, when we looked at the game, I thought they scored. They're scoring cracking tries. These are players who aren't playing particularly well week in, week out for their clubs. Their clubs are not, the regions are not at the top of where they'd like to be. Yet when they put on the jersey, there's an added 10 or 20%. For me, I loved looking at the game when they bring on Callum Sheedy really quickly after halftime. And they've done that for two matches in the trot. And you can see Dan Biggar isn't happy about going off. And Sheedy had a couple of struggles in the first one, but he didn't have any on the second one. You know, so they're blooding him properly. It's not a sort of final riposte in the last 7 or 8 minutes. It's the proper 30 minutes on a field to go and deliver a win. And look, I thought some of the refereeing decisions drove me to distraction over the weekend. But the team that has the, I always say it, the team that has the points at the end deserve the win. You know, it's you get caught in fandom otherwise.
Stuart, you used the phrase there about England nosediving. So that suggests you think this is a bit more serious than, well, six Saracen starters at the weekend still struggling badly for match fitness. It's more than that.
Well, I think England have been in trouble since they lost to South Africa. The fact they won the title meant that English fans didn't worry because results are always regarded as more important than performance. But I've watched England's performance level drop quite badly. In 2020, I think only the win against Ireland, where Ireland helped England with a dollop of awful defending from kicks. But still, England were powerful then. Apart from that, I don't think England have played well since the World Cup final. And included in that, I would say they have played ranked badly in a lot of them. And it didn't surprise me that Wales beat England at all. But funnily enough, whilst their nose dives, and it's two losses out of three, they actually, for the first time in a year, they probably tried to be creative and put a little bit more together. But I think at the moment, England, they look like a team who have lost a sense of identity. They got so stuck in this territorial power blast game where they just pressurized you, got in your final 10 meters, and then went for the tries. They concede penalties. They're trying to play rugby. They're not quite certain what they're looking to do now. And funnily enough, because of that, I think they'll go and beat France, because that would be typically French. I think they'll lose to Ireland. But I don't think England really know where they're going. And what's fascinating now for this oncoming game is Eddie Jones is under pressure, I think, not to win the game, but to blood some young players. He has been absolutely stubborn as you could be. He's kept them all out. He's picked his same team. And they have been experienced players whose test match game management has got worse and worse and worse.
George, can I ask a question on that? From that World Cup final, which was, there was an extraordinary show of power from South Africa.
Yes.
And there also was an extraordinary show of skill and pace and inventiveness in their backline on the two or three occasions when it actually showed itself and the opportunity arose. They took it, South Africa took it. And for me, England went back to the idea that actually we can out-muscle everybody, and it became that sort of standard idea. Did that game plan, that set of a game plan, did that mitigate against picking the Simmonses or picking other players that have been playing and lighting up the Premiership? I mean, they're not picking players on form. They're picking players who aren't even playing.
No, they're not. Eddie is a contrarian. And Eddie has now, he's made this statement that the gap between club and country is huge. And he knows best. And there's no doubt at all, this whole Saracen situation is the nth degree. It's taken it to the utmost level. And the Saracens players are not playing well. Even Maro Itoje, who is a fabulous player, he concedes five penalties because he's right on the game line, and he's just, because he's not playing matches, he's just a little bit rusty, and he's half a metre too far the wrong way. But Eddie Jones won't shift there. And I think Keith is right in what he said about the World Cup final, in that Jones, even before then, believed in a pack with power and a back three, 9, 10 and 12, who could put you in the right places. And then, like South Africa, you know, England scored good tries, but they didn't use the backs very much. I think that defeat against South Africa convinced them they had to go even more, play every card in terms of forward power. And I think Eddie now, it's two World Cup finals that have slipped past him, and I don't think he's got the right lesson. I think the lesson he thinks he's got to learn is it's all about the forwards, because England were too powerful in 2003. And South Africa blasted his England team in 2019. And I think there is a one-dimensional degree to it, which means, you know, at least in the Welsh game, I was encouraged that in their own half, they looked to utilise space. But rugby is a game of balance. South Africa, if they didn't play a balanced game against England, it's because they didn't need to be. Mm. And that's fine. Mm. But you have to have that capacity to be balanced. Otherwise, someone bigger than you will find you out, or someone faster than you will find you out if you're a quick team. You have to have that mix. It's what makes South Africa the one team that can beat New Zealand more regularly than any other. They have that capacity to do that.
We saw, in fairness to him, we saw some great rugby in the build-up to the Youngs try. Really good stuff. And maybe, is there a kind of rationale there on his part whereby he looks at the Saracens lads and he says, the Vunipolas and Itoje and Farrell, you're still my guys, and this is going to be a stodgy year for us because of the Saracens situations, but I want continuity. I'm going to nurse you guys all back to health. We're sticking together as a group. We'll evolve the game. And this is just going to be looked back on in history as not a great year. And it's all about the World Cup ultimately. I mean, I presume that's a lot of his thinking.
I think that's, if that's his thinking, that's disheartening for all the other players that are coming along. So when
killer for the kids, isn't it, Keith?
It is for the kids, but actually not just for the kids. For the guys who are playing incredibly well and winning trophies, yeah, like in Exeter.
Yeah. And who would you take from Exeter then? Sam Simmons is often mentioned. How many Exeter players should be in that England 15, for instance?
For me, there doesn't need to be a huge amount, but the Form 10 has been for 12 months Simmons. So I'd have him in the squad. I'd have him exposed to if there is such a gulf, as Eddie says, and I actually think there is quite a big gulf, and I do think that there are international type players who understand time and space at a kind of earlier rate than other players, and I think that they're comfortable in it and can make that step. How would you ever know unless he gets up there to play? That becomes a difficulty. I mean, for me, it looked a little bit better watching George Ford playing at 10. I just think he's a more comfortable 10 and is confident in the manner in which he plays 10. So, but I'm looking at, I look at Max Malins at 15. I think he sets the pace alight. I think Randall at 9 in Bristol, fantastic, young, but get him in there, get him have an opportunity to go and play. You could chop and change this. There's enough for three or four teams there, but it isn't. It's sticking with the same, you know. And for me, for England, with the strength and depth that they have, there's no point having it if you don't use it, unless the first 15 or first 23 are playing incredibly well, and they're not.
No, they're not. I mean, he would point to the fact they did win the Six Nations last year and they won the Autumn Nations Cup. I accept your point on performance, Stuart, but I mean, this is a relatively late development that results have gone awry.
It's performance, Stuart.
But it's performance, because Eddie Jones talks about the World Cup, and then when England win games, he said it's about winning the matches. He wants it both ways. And he can't have it. And you know, if it's a smaller rugby nation, then I understand it. But England have got the most assets in world rugby. So it's no good them saying we have to put everything in for the World Cup. Because if England have two Six Nations, like the way they're going, it damages the future of the game. It's still very much a distant relation of football. And a lot of people, if the national team aren't going well, will go, blimey, sod rugby. Because as Keith knows, the clubs think that they're getting bigger in the professional age, but really everything is a sideshow in rugby union next to test match rugby. And England cannot afford to be playing, I think, A, in an unimaginative, poor way, because it means any newcomers just go, you know what, they won, but rugby's boring. And two, I think they do have to keep winning, and they can do it both. They've got a huge squad. They've got massive assets. Eddie Jones can go and get basically most coaches that he wants from the far side of the world. He could buy them in, just as the RFU bought Eddie Jones in. And England have to perform, and most of the time they have to win. And like I say, I thought there was some encouragement in Cardiff, but in the context of the three games so far, it has been a dismal display from England.
Okay. Generally, Rome or Italy at home means you're in a hiding to nothing. So it's interesting, Stuart, you felt opposition notwithstanding, you saw enough to give you a note of encouragement over what Ireland are about. So tell us precisely what you're talking about there.
Bit more pace. I think Ireland, you know, the first year of Farrell was quite similar to Schmidt. It was a little bit more ambitious, but God, we saw no offloads. There was one moment when I'll encapsulate what I liked about Ireland in one try. Gary Ringrose faded right to left. He delayed it. He popped a pass. Keenan picked an angle. Everything was done at pace. I have seen Ireland get slower and slower and slower, play a more conservative, risk-averse game. And yes, they keep ball, as they showed in Paris in the Six Nations, but too often they can't do anything with it. At the highest level, you have to be able to light the fuse and accelerate your game. And I feel Ireland have just got too one-paced and too slow. I felt, if you looked at England's performance at home to Italy and Ireland's away, there was more snap, there was more ambition, there was more wit in Ireland's performance. I think wit's an important word as well, because I just think Ireland have been clunky. And I mentioned Ringrose, the other guy I'll mention, who makes a massive difference, I think, now that Ireland are trusting him, whether he's playing five or six, is Tadhg Byrne. Because Byrne offloads. Byrne is a brilliant footballer, and he is allowing the backs and the forwards to actually interact in the same way as, dare I say, 1,000 years ago, a bloke who couldn't throw the ball did just the same in Keith. You know, the spark can come from anywhere. I think Byrne is giving it. I think that Ringrose Keenan link showed an improved Ireland. And I know that Italy are poor, but I just think, to, you know, it's like horse racing. You know, you, sometimes you study form, and England and Ireland played the same horse, and Ireland beat it a lot easier and a lot more impressively.
Yeah, and I think part of the argument that goes against that, so I do think you need pace or variation. You absolutely do. What Ireland did on the weekend was they ran with pace. They had a little bit of different things happening. There was people running different lines. The only downside for that, and the only caveat that you have to put in, is that Italy's defensive line was non-existent. And Ireland, like the Irish provinces, are incredible if you give them a bit of space. But when you put them under pressure, when 9 and 10 are under huge pressure, the ball tends to not be as slick, and you're not running from as much depth. You don't have as much time to make those decisions. And invariably, in the history of this tournament, so in the 21 years of the Six Nations, Italy always show up on the first couple of weeks. Yeah. They really do. They're the chance they have to win. They don't show up afterwards. You know, it's very unusual for them. They're wrecked, they're jaded. The same players are being used all the time, and they're under the cosh for the whole time. So I don't know what it's exactly like with like. I was happy with the fact that we scored. I'm happy with Keenan all the time. I think he's growing into a very fine international player, and I'd like to see more and more and more of him. He gives me a sense of security when you look at it through the team. But I just don't think you're going to be given enough space when you go and play Scotland. That space will not be there, because they know full well 9 and 10, put them under pressure. They're then going to put 12 and 13 under pressure. So, look, but for me, and again, just to touch on your point of Tadhg Byrne, the two Tadhgs, having the two guys back in the field who are able to make a pass or not make the pass, who aren't standing when they take the ball and pivoting and passing. That's another thing that drives me mad. Run onto the bloody ball. Even if you're pulling it back, run onto it. Because if you're standing, you're not going to build up a head of steam if you decide not to pass it. I mean, there's not really a dummy there. It's not really a pivot. You just happen to be there. So, look, I was encouraged by the win. I was encouraged. I'll tell you what I'm encouraged by, and I'd be interested again in yours. I still feel the players are playing for Andy Farrell. I think they believe that this is changing, but it's taking a long period of time under which to change. They seem to be very confident in where they're going. I just don't know that we're necessarily seeing it yet.
Well, Sexton was effusive on that point in the post-match interview. He said, trust me, I'm going above and beyond here when I say we are really on the right track. We really are. And they absolutely do, Stuart, believe in what Andy Farrell and Mike Catt are preaching. On Keith's point about our 9 and 10 under pressure and we go to pot a little bit, I'm sure that's true of all teams to some extent or other, but it still does feel like pressure and maybe a rushing defence is our kryptonite.
Well, Keith was talking about 9 and 10, and I think that's at the crux of the issue as well. In 2017, I think Conor Murray was playing as well as any scrum half in the world. He had that kicking game, but he had a fast game. He had a lethal try-scoring ability for 5 metres, and he could break. He's had injuries. He's a little bit older. I just think when you play Murray and Sexton, there is no threat at all, and it forces Ireland to retreat in the way they play. And he's not perfect. He makes errors, but I would like to see Jamison Gibson-Parks get another run there. I think he can put... You, Keith, talked about the Scotland game and the pressure imposed on Ireland. I think Gibson-Parks can do a job on Ali Price. And I think because he's quick over 5, over 10, and he's got that Wellington Hurricanes capacity to play and think quickly, which has always been their way, I think the threat he poses will allow Johnny Sexton just a little bit more room and freedom to play his game and manipulate opposition. I feel that when you play the 9 and 10 and neither are a threat in the slightest, then it all comes down onto Sexton. He's a brave bloke and he ends up getting physically battered. And I just think the Leinster scrum half Gibson-Parks just frees him just a little bit. And with him free, there's a split second more for Henshaw to start taking ball on the game line. And that's another key. If Robbie Henshaw's taking it a metre back, then Ireland have to play this no-risk game. They will revert to it. If he gets over that game line and Ringrose starts running little angles, then there is a sniff of Ireland actually developing and improving for the first time, I think, in about 2.5 years, because I think they've been very static for a long time.
Well, listen, we know all about it, trust me. When you say neither Murray or Sexton are a threat, just people might be wondering, what do you mean by that?
A running threat. Neither have the pace now, Johnny's got lovely hands, but you can let him go because he can't really get beyond that game line. I think he needs to play the game a metre further back.
Really? Gibson,
yeah, I think he needs to be.
I know you're a 10, and I'm a has been hooker, right? But I find we are so far back that whatever play we have is gets exposed very, very quickly, and in a rushing defence.
Hang on, Keith. What would I say? I believe a flyer. When I say he should be flat, I mean he should be a metre in front of the game line when he takes the ball. What I'm talking about with Sexton is he should. When I say that, I'm talking about my vision of an outside half being able to play flat and do things very quickly, like Finn Russell. I'm not saying he stands where he is, but I'm saying he needs to be a metre back from the very best fly halves. I don't think Johnny can stand there and manipulate the game anymore. And I don't think Ireland can afford for him to do that, because you're in the traffic and you take a hammering. I think he has to be just a little bit back. And that means that Henshaw his burden of work has to be exceptional to get them over that gain line.
Okay. And a speedy number nine beside Johnny allows him to do that, is it?
Well, a speedy number nine means that the 6, 7, 8, the other 9 and 10 have just got, they're focused elsewhere. A 9 and a 10 who both run tend to leave you short of game shaping ability. A 9 and a 10 who are passers and kickers and don't run at all takes a thread out of the game. And that in time goes through into your midfield as well. And it'll get all the way to 13 and ring rows. So you have to have someone 9, 10 who's capable. Scotland, sometimes you think with Price and Russell are almost too much that way, but they don't have an option. But I think Ireland, there is a clear option there, and it's no longer Murray and Sexton. I don't believe that works unless Ireland think they have a pack who can dominate and bash the hell out of opposition. And great job as Paul O'Connell, I think, is doing. Ireland don't have that pack in the set piece yet.
So, Keith, what about Stuart's point there on Sexton and Murray together these days?
Yeah, look, I think it's a valid point. I think you have to start throwing up options for what's going to happen either now or in the future. And I think an awful lot of the conversation has been built around whether Johnny Sexton at 35, 36 is the guy to be able to drive this on into the future. And I think if we're honest, we know that it can't be too long a future. You know, it just can't be. That's just the nature of it. I also think that for periods of time in the last 6 or 9 months, the Irish pack have not cleared the ball. So it's become incredibly difficult at 9 and 10. And I do think that Gibson Park at times can be put under a huge amount of pressure, and Connor obviously can. So for me, I would be saying, yes, Connor, play, but you need to interest the back row. You need to interest the backs, and you need to be able to sling the ball from time to time. You need to mix it up an awful lot more. For me, my overriding observation is that for the last 2.5 years, we've tried to slow down the game, not speed it up. That's very frustrating. As someone who's, we want to talk about the game as entertainment. We also want to talk about it as winning. Mm. We also want to talk about performances. But when you slow it down, put a crocodile in there and kick the ball up into the air, you just say, that was not how it was designed to be played.
And was the logic in slowing it down a bid for some kind of control, a stranglehold? Is that the selling point of it?
For me, it was done at a time when we were incredibly good at getting it back, and the laws of the game pretty much meant you could run at full tilt, jump up into the air, you're nearly guaranteed to catch it if it was kicked well. Conor Murray was the best kicker around from 9. Now there's a lot of lazy interference allowed. It may not be as daft as Robson's penalty from the other day, but actually you can run across the line a little, and you don't want to make any contact with a guy in the air. You'll be penalised. That law has changed then, so that has taken away the chance of winning that ball back. I don't mind kicking the ball. I just don't like it being the option unless the ball is perfect. I think there has to be other options.
Mm. Stuart, I saw you nodding when Keith said we've slowed it down over the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, but teams slow ball down when they become obsessed with the conservative control of the ball. The faster you play a game of rugby, the harder it is unless your skill levels stand up. New Zealand have been the best rugby nation on this planet for 120-odd years because they have the skill levels that enable forwards and backs to play at pace. And I think Ireland got a nosebleed when they got to number one in the world and they backed up. And they had, but they had a 9 and 10, to be fair, who were very good at controlling rugby. And I thought, let's do that. And I think sometimes you get so good at something, it hurts you in the future because I think that's what we do. Mm. But as Keith said, you know, Johnny's, what, is he 36 or 36 now?
Going on, I think, in the summer, yeah.
Johnny's not going to make the World Cup. It's kidology. He's an absolute hero. He takes a battering for Leinster and Ireland. He's not going to get there. So if they're going to use him now, then they might as well start trying to play some decent rugby. And Ireland, I think, went slow because they wanted to keep the ball. And I'll always use the... If you look at Ireland's offloading game, it disappeared. It absolutely disappeared. And it was a little bit like in the Premiership. Exeter were very successful, but they never offloaded. They were allowed to go off their feet, over the top, and seal the ball off. And that's the other thing that has changed, and we haven't discussed. With the law interpretation at breakdown, there is an attempt. I'm not saying it's working yet, but there is an attempt to start penalising people going off their feet. England whinged about it at the weekend, but I think Pascal Gauzet, in many ways, was absolutely right. And now Ireland cannot do that. Ireland did it with Leinster, just as Exeter were very good with England, and so were Saracens. You can't do that now, so you can't hold this ball 30, 40 phases. You're not doing that. England now barely get to 5 phases, where last year they were doing 10, 15, which means you've got to find a way to expose a defence earlier. And that's why I'll come back to that moment when Ringrose just faded across and Keenan picked the angle. I haven't seen Ireland do anything like that for a while. And they've got to get people like Lama into the game and they've got to utilise that. Okay. Game has changed. Listen,
we're into 3 years of miserable rugby, so we'll take all the signs of encouragement we can get, to be honest. Rugby and Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team, Team of Us, everyone in. Just a very quick final one, I think, Keith. People might be interested for your view on Ronan Kelleher. And he had nice hands himself in the build-up to that first Will Connors try. So his line-out throwing was the question mark. Is he banging on the door? Where are you on our hooker situation?
I think he has a much higher ceiling than any of the other hookers. I think Sheehan, who I haven't seen enough of in Leinster, is the next one on that conveyor belt. I like an awful lot about him, and it is about getting match time, big match time, where you're throwing under pressure. Throwing is not just hitting a point on the wall. It's understanding the nuance of what happens in front of you and making certain you put it in a place for the guy to catch and out of the reach of other people to catch. I know that sounds incredibly simple. It's not that simple, and there's an awful lot of moving parts for it. It also comes down to that high level of confidence that you have with the players you're playing with. The more he plays, the better he's going to be. All hookers struggle at the start. It's one of those truisms that happen in the sport, and they get to understand it over a period of time. So for him, I would also say for a few other players, there's a few guys now that are young, but we're looking at them and saying, God, they have got serious potential. How do you unearth that potential for an international stage? How do you do it? And do you do it now? So I'd be doing it now. So for me, he's the guy. I just think he offers a huge amount. And he offers a level of power. And when you had him and Tadhg Furlong at the same time, that's two power guys in the front row. That's pretty interesting. But they need to play. He has to. But you're going to play against certain teams where they'll just terrify you, where they'll have read your intent before you throw it and you're threading a needle from 10 or 15 yards. That becomes very interesting. But you'll never know how to do that until you do it and fail, and then figure out how to do it right afterwards.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, Keith, thanks very much. Stuart Barnes, I wish all my guests sipped on some wine and some biscuits as they chatted rugby. Great to have you with us.
It was a little bit of duck, actually.
Oh, that's, excuse me. Of course. Duck and wine and rugby. I mean, listen.
I had coffee. What the duck is what that says. So no duck for me.
Very good. Fellas, thanks a mil. Cheers.
Sure.
Cheers, Joe.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.